Dr. George Pinkerton, Reel 5. So you'd seen this column of smoke rising.
As we came into the harbour in Barry, we realised it was full of burning ships. I think there were 11 quite big cargo ships on fire. And the Germans had had the most successful air raids of the war on Barry the night before. And, of course, I was supposed to go back to the hospital in Barry to pick up the rest of my kit, which I'd left behind. It wasn't much anyway. But everybody said, it's no good going there. They don't want you there. They're quite busy enough without you. You make your way back to the unit. So I stood by the roadside and did this sort of thing a bit. And after about 5 minutes, a New Zealand field workshop unit appeared. One of these great big workshop lorries. And they said, where are you going? I said, well, I'm getting more or less back to home. And he said, well, we're going sort of this way. But he said, come on, anyway. So we got in, and I hadn't got any kit. I hadn't got a blanket or anything like that at all. I hadn't got any food, of course. But they fixed me up with food and a blanket and something to put in my head, because I spent the night with them there. And they were a super crowd. I don't know who they were. The officer's name was Cyril, I remember. And I had the utmost difficulty in getting away from them, because it wasn't long before Christmas. They said, well, come and spend Christmas with us, Doc. He said, oh, you're much better time with us. We'll be back with them limeys. Anyway, no, pommies, I should have said, could be New Zealanders. So I eventually stood by the wayside and thumbed at someone else and got back to the unit.
So, you've been missed, obviously. I mean, had there been anyone else to...
Oh, yes,
take over your medical
there was always someone else, you see.
Right.
Someone else took over the RMOs to him.
Right.
Anyway, I got back, then we moved up. Again, we were more or less in the middle of Italy there. We moved up to a place called Lenciano. We were getting near the front lay between Ortona and Orsonia. Orsonia on the coast, Ortona in the mountains, and the front lay between there. And Lenciano was a little way back from it. And as I was coming through Lenciano, I bumped into one of the field survey regiments, RA chaps, and I'd acted as MO4 in Cornwall. Mm-hmm. So I spent an afternoon with them, which was very interesting, because they were very intelligent, very nice lot, the field survey regiment. They said, would you like to see how we work, Doc? So I said, yes, I'd love to see how you work. So they took me up to the sort of spy hole, which was in a rather bit battered up old house in the looking out over the German positions, where they're doing things like flash spotting and sound ranging. They have three points where they spot a flash, and then of course if they get the bearing on these, then the three bearings will show them where the gun is fired. And same with sound ranging, they have three points, three microphones, with the difference in time, but they pick up the sound of the gun, shows them where they are. So I had an interesting afternoon with them, and then eventually found my way back to the regiment, which was in a very depressing area. Horrid place. Mm-hmm. Along this Ortona Orsonia front. Mm-hmm. And the place called Eriele was the sort of village in front of us, which was sometimes the Germans had it, sometimes we had it. The only time the Germans didn't have it, we had a New Zealand unit on our left. And they had a Maori battalion there. And the thing with Eriele was it's got one or two big old sort of warehouse places, I suppose, which had got huge vats of applejack. You know, any time I ever drank cider on the continent, I think, the huge vats of applejack. But it was all right, but the Maori battalions got a scent with us, and they used to come in and get absolutely plastered on this applejack. And by which time, of course, anybody who went near area, they was dead. Didn't matter who they were, German or anything else. I mean, these chaps would just go off. Oh dear, enormous admiration for the New Zealanders, but I think the Maori battalion was a bit frightening. Anyway, we lurked at this wretched place for some time, and we had Christmas there.
Mm.
What
was that like then?
Oh, you know, very no-no Christmas that one was. We did the best we could, because dear old Mungo, the old quartermaster, he was wonderful, really. I mean, he was an old man, comparatively old man, but he always used to get the food up, you know, hot containers and so on, and he'd get Christmas dinner of some sort up to us. Mm. Wonderful old man.
And, so you ate your Christmas
dinner? We had our Christmas dinner after a sort.
Where?
Yes. Market was snow, and there was snow on the ground, and it was wasn't very nice.
Mm. Where did you actually eat your Christmas dinner?
In the mess. We had a mess. Right. We sort of semi dug out mess. Uh-huh. It was quite a good place. We dug into the side of a quarry sort of thing, and we were fairly safe there, but it was wasn't very comfortable. Mm.
All wishing you were at home, I suppose.
All wishing you were at home, yes. Mm. Yes, and that was Altona and Alsonia. The other thing I never realised until I saw it being happening is that there was a flight of bombers came over to bomb Altona, and realised that they never actually go over the targets at all. They drop their bombs, I suppose, about a best part of a mile away, and then turn away, and of course the bombs carry on and land on the target. But you know, it's sort of easy when you think of it, you understand why it happened. I never seen it happen. I never realised it. Anyway, I digress.
Mm. So from there, after Christmas, you moved, did you?
Yes, we did. We moved the. The Fifth Army were having awful bothers on the Mediterranean side, on the left side, and so they moved 5th Division along, I was with the 5th Division. They moved 5th Division over to join 5th Army, and so we then proceeded up in the general direction of Casino. We never got there, of course. The general direction of Casino to the River Garigliano, which we did. Our battalion didn't, sending the brigade did the crossing. We did followed up on the Garigliano, a crossing there to a place called Minterno, where we sort of cowered in inside. It was all rather exciting around there. Anyway, we were there for a time, and yes, having taken Garigliano, obviously nothing very much was going to happen until Casino was taken. Mm. So a holding line was put in there.
Right, so you were quite static.
Well, we came out, actually.
Right.
We came out, and it was at that point that I admitted what I did. Mm-hmm. And there were lots of changes at that stage. I said the battalion got out, was getting a bit, and had a bit of a break there, and I was left the KOLI and was appointed to as medical officer to the 5th Division Tactical Training School, or the Battle School, or as irreverent people called the Bottle School, which was at that time, it actually was still over the other side of the Pyrenees, But we soon came back and were stationed in a little town, the name of which I cannot for the life of me remember, which is fairly near Salerno. And that was interesting. I was there for about, I suppose, a couple of months, because they were an interesting lot, the technical school. They mostly rather old and war-torn and war-weary soldiers like myself there. I enjoyed that time at the Bottle School, although it was very dangerous. I nearly got near things happened there with grenades and mortars and things than anywhere else. Anyway, I enjoyed my stint.
What were they actually training there?
They were training in infantry. There were a lot of new report recruits like that. You see, an awful lot of the old bods have gone. Mm. And so they were bringing new or relatively new people in to train them in infantry tactics and so on. And in fact, we had one of those. It was really rather funny. This was the household cavalry, who was really proving rather useless in the mountains of Italy. They came along to be converted to infantry, and they did not like it. I didn't say that. They did come in, and while I was in there, I had a. I enjoyed that because they were interesting people. And we was an interesting little village we were in southern Italy. I cannot remember the name of it, and I only hope it wasn't the village that was destroyed by floods a couple of years ago. Mm. It was must have been very near. It wasn't the same one, I don't think. But when you went into this village, the first thing you came to was a shop selling anemone and saucepans. The next thing you came to was a little workshop making anemone and saucepans. The next thing you came to was a rolling mill, rolling aluminium. The next thing you came to was a blast furnace, melting aluminium ore. When you got to that one, the next thing you got to was a lake with a little hydroelectric station which provided power for this. And eventually you got beyond the lake and went up the mountain a little bit. You came to a bauxite mine. So there was an entire aluminium industry in this one village. Absolutely fascinating. Anyway, I was living quietly in this village one day and came out and it was raining mud. I thought, well, that's pretty odd. But it stopped raining after a little while. The next day, we began to get some dust blowing in. I had, for some reason or other, to go to Naples. So I got in the truck, and we set off for Naples. And as we got down the road, things started falling from the sky, you know, things about this cricket ball size. Mm. A little bit further down, and they were football size, and hitting this truck with tremendous crunch, and the whole ground was gradually getting covered with lava dust. And of course, it got dark. It had been dark. The previous day, what had happened was it suddenly became dark about 12 o'clock in the morning. And the local inhabitants all streamed out of church and put up a most enormous prayer, but it suddenly got light again. But then the next morning, we were running into this lava dust, and I had the visions. I thought, well, you know, I shall end up in a museum in Pompeii with this lot coming down. And anyway, we got into Naples, and as soon as you got out of it, you could see this enormous 10,000 feet column of lava and smoke. Mm-hmm. Extraordinary sight. And we had to come back round Vesuvius to get back again. Mm. Anyway, that was that one. And then, not very long after that, I was transferred to a field ambulance, I think it was 164.
right, yes.
But I left the bottle school out of that. Mm. Then we went back. Of course, some of the division had gone up to Anzio by that time. I wasn't there.
Yes, yeah. Right. So do you know when you left bottle school?
What time did I... When did I say I joined...
You went to Italy in September 43.
Yeah, no. When did I, in fact, join the 164 Field Ambulance?
June 44. In Palestine.
Yes, it was. It must have been a little bit earlier than that. Right. Anyway, because on June 44 I was in Rome. I was with 164. Must have been May. I must have joined 164.
Right. So you
was at the bottle school.
You joined the 164 in Italy.
Yes.
At Palatine. Or was that Palestine?
No, it went to Palestine later.
Right, okay.
I joined it in Italy.
Right, okay.
It would have been in probably April.
Right, okay. That's fine.
April, May, 44.
Right, okay. So you were transferred, do you know why?
No, I think they tended to move us around a bit.
Yeah. So what was it like joining the 164?
Well, I knew them. I'd sort of been serving alongside them for a couple of years, so I knew most of the people there.
Uh-huh. So what was the difference between being attached to a field ambulance and being the regimental?
Well, the regimental officer, you're just the regimental medical officer. The field ambulance, you do whatever is to do.
Right.
I was actually adjacent to that one too, which I enjoyed. I rather like buzzing people about.
Right. So the duties were quite different.
Oh, quite different. Yes, yes, yes.
So what were you doing with the field ambulance then? Can you explain to us, the range of your duties?
Not a lot. I think we used to sort of make ourselves, we usually find ourselves doing odd jobs for other doctors and so on, and generally supervising the way things were done.
Right. The way things were done?
The way casualties were dealt with and so on.
Yeah.
But the...
So the field ambulance, was this literally ambulances?
A field ambulance is not necessarily have anything to do with an ambulance. It's always an odd expression. Mm. A field ambulance is a rather misnomer in that there's no. It does have one or two ambulances attached to it, but virtually it's nothing to do with the ambulance. It's just a collection of medically trained personnel.
Right. Okay.
I think that's probably the best way of putting it.
Yeah, and so. In the field, that means that you're mobile.
You're mobile.
You move
that's right.
Your troops.
You move. Yeah. We move with the troops. That's right.
Right. So, the 164 field ambulance was attached to whom?
We were still 5th Division.
5th Division.
Yes.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So. Yes. A division has 3 field ambulances.
Yeah.
One nominally with each brigade, but you call one of the team brigades. A division has 3. That's 3 brigades, you see, as well as certain other odd bods.
Right. Yeah. So you would be moved about within the division, would you?
Yeah, if necessary. Yes. Mm-hmm. But of course, we went back to Palestine again, really for sort of recouping and retraining.
Mm.
We had quite a pleasant time there.
Right. How did you actually get from Italy to Palestine?
We went back on. An old boat called the Champollion. The Champollion, it was an old French liner. The Champollion was, I think, a famous French admiral.
Mm-hmm.
It burnt down about not so long after the war, but it was quite a lot in the papers about the poor old Champollion. And that's why we went back, and we were in Palestine, around Haifa, that sort of area there.
Mm.
And...
And your ability to wear, were you...
We lived in tents.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Mm. It was quite fun. We found a sort of Roman colony while we were there, and used our spare time digging this out of the sand. It was quite interesting. Didn't think it was any interest, any significance at all. People came down and have a look at it, but they didn't think they were very impressed. Mm. Mm.
You had some rest and recuperation there.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, quite a social sort of place, was it?
It was quite a social way. Yes, we used to go out quite a bit. Mm. Yes. So
what was there to see there? What was there to
You've got Haifa quite near, which is, right. You could go in Tel Aviv, you could get drinks or dance and so on.
Mm. Okay, and Jerusalem then?
And Jerusalem, yes. And also I had a leave in Beirut, which is very nice. It was a nice place, Beirut, in those days.
Right. So you had the freedom to travel about quite a bit?
Yes, not too bad, really, because we were actually in a station in Damascus for part of the time. Uh-huh. And I used to borrow a motorcycle again, and I had one or two patients in hospital in Beirut. And I used to... It's a lovely drive over the mountains, particularly on a motorcycle, from Damascus over the mountains to Beirut. And used to call and see my patients, and then go down to the Norman Hotel and have a swim and a drink, and then come back over the mountains in my motorbike. It was really rather nice.
So, I mean, you'd been qualified not that many years now. You'd qualified in, was it
41?
Yes. So we're now up to 44.
Yeah.
So only 3 years.
Beginning of 44.
You've got quite a lot of experience.
Oh, yes, I guess. I certainly moved around. Mm. And then, of course, went back. When the time came to go back, we were intending to go back into Germany eventually, and we went on took a boat called the Ville d'Oran, which was a very nice, fairly small boat, which took us back to Taranto, and then we took a no, we didn't took us back to Naples. I beg its pardon.
Right.
We're in a transit camp of sorts there for a few days, and then we took a boat again up to... What's your name? I can't remember that one. The name from Naples went up to Marseille, and spent a night in a horrible transit camp in the coldest place I've ever been, on the hills outside Marseille, and then caught a train which trundled up to... trundled up to Brussels, I think.
Mm-hmm. And this was the whole of the field ambulance travelling together?
Not only the field ambulance, but virtually the whole of the division.
Right. So quite a huge...
Oh, yeah, it was... Yes, there were two or three ships, probably.
Right.
Yeah. So anyway, we all arrived up in the... arrived up in Ghent.
Had you known where you were going...
Well, we had a vague idea. We had a vague idea, you know. We knew we were going to back into join the war in Europe.
Right. Were you aware of these, the D-Day landings?
Oh yes.
And so on?
Yes. The sigh of relief went up when we heard about it, because we were in Rome at the time. And everybody said, "Well, the general thing was about time too." You know? it was really rather unkind of us, but. But that was the feeling, that it's about time, because we felt that, these chaps had a very rough time. GD was very rough, but they'd been in England all for 2 or 3 years, and we hadn't.
So trying to get used to the new climate must have posed problems, because you'd been you'd been in Cairo in 42,
Climate in winter in Palestine is not that warm. We had one of the very few years that there was actually snow at Bethlehem at Christmas time. Yeah. It's very rare, actually. Mm. It only happens about every 30 years. But anyway, we then came up to and settled in Ghent, where we then picked up someone else's because we our our guns and lorries and things had all been left in Italy, and which we left them there. Other troops, when we went, we didn't take anything with us, in other words, to Palestine. So we had to pick up someone else's guns and someone else's transport, and then set off for the last rush of the war.
Right. So you mustered in Ghent, was that right?
Yes.
Yes, and you by that time had transport.
Well, we picked it up guns. In Ghent, yes.
Yes, okay. And so what sort of briefing did you get about what you were going to be doing now?
Well, we all felt that you could feel that this was the end, really. Mm-hmm. You know, you could see it. I mean, while we were in Ghent, we saw the airborne armadas of gliders and things flying over for the Rhine landing.
Right.
And when we weren't all that far away from it, we knew it wasn't going to be very long there. Mm. Although the Germans did put up kind of a fight at the end, but, I didn't, you know, had really very little first sight of it because we were, as I say, were sort of following up without too much direct contact.
Right. So where did you go from Ghent?
Well, we went through over the Rhine at. Well, I remember going through Osnabrück. Which side of the Rhine it was, I don't know. It was the first really bombed town that I'd ever seen in Germany. I mean, I saw plenty of them later on, but Osnabrück was the first. Mm-hmm. And then we crossed the Rhine at Weser, mm-hmm. and we pushed on through the Rhine, and we were up just outside Lübeck. Mm-hmm. When the war officially ended.
Right. So had you done much fighting on the way through, or were you unopposed? Or
We weren't unopposed. The division had a certain amount of fighting. Not a lot, actually. They had one or two little patches, but.
Mm. Did you see any fighting?
No, I didn't really. No,
right.
No.
Okay.
No, I was safely out of the way at that stage. we finished up at Lübeck at the end of the war ended, and then we went from there to a delightful little place called Wismar,
right.
Which was a little Baltic seaside town, quite untouched, lovely little place.
Right, okay, stop you there then. When you say that Osnabrück was the first bombed town
yeah.
that you've seen, what effect did that have on you to see that? Because you hadn't seen an enormous amount of...
I'd seen London, of course.
Right, yes.
But I mean, that was London was a mess, but Osnabrück was simply obliterated. I think one of the things, I felt so damn sorry for the Germans. You know, it was quite an illogical thing to think, but one did these, you know, and they still survived in all this dreadful wreckage. Mm. And one just couldn't help being terribly sorry for them.
Yes, yeah. So, and you crossed the Rhine without opposition at Weser?
Yes.
Yeah.
The only opposition I got was my car joint nearly got stuck on a bridge. I had acquired a I don't know what it was, an Audi or something like that I'd acquired somewhere.
Mm-hmm.